Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. Today is March 3rd, 2021. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 31,270, the NASDAQ at 12,997, and the S&P at 3,819. Our topic tonight is children and education funding. So we're going to talk a little bit about tax implications, tax credits, some planning opportunities, hopefully, and we'll see where we go with some of this, but we also will take your income tax questions. I'd like to make sure that listeners know this is tax season, and I am, you know, open for tax questions as well, and we'll do my best to answer them. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion if you want to talk live with me. If you're not comfortable talking live, of course, you can just give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810, and email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So the broad overview for tonight, income tax benefits of having children, the child tax credit, the dependent care credit, some education credits, and different education opportunities, etc. But we have to talk a little bit about how we get those credits. How do we qualify for them? And so I thought I would also talk about who is your child or your dependent. So child tax credit, dependent care credit, education credits, but also education opportunities, which could be college savings plans, 529 accounts, American Opportunity Tax Credit, lifetime learning credit, student loan interest deduction. So we'll see what we get through here. So first, who is your child or dependent? There are test for this, which include that the taxpayer themselves cannot be claimed as a dependent by someone else. The dependent cannot be filing a joint return with someone else, and the dependent must be a U.S. citizen or resident alien or resident of Canada or Mexico. So let me unwrap that for a second. The taxpayer themselves cannot be claimed as a dependent. This probably would apply when you're talking maybe about like teen pregnancies. Maybe you have an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old who's living in the household with you, and, you know, they have a child. But they are your dependent. Your child is your dependent, and then they have a child. So there's tests for which, you know, you have to see whose child or dependent is this. Then we would determine if they are a qualifying child. And there are six tests for that, which include relationship. So a descendant or a sibling. So that is something that some people may not have thought of. So it might not be your child. It could be a sibling. We have sometimes if, you know, an older child is now responsible for their younger siblings because they've lost their parents. That does happen. I it has happened. So it could be a descendant or a sibling, an adopted child or a foster child. So again, one of the six tests for determining if this person is a qualifying child, relationship. Second, age, under age 19 at the end of the year, or under age 24 at the end of the year, but a full-time student enrolled full-time in school. Now, it's interesting because I didn't further look this up, but in the guidance, it says not online, full-time in school, but not online. Can you imagine what that would mean? They must have had to make some kind of provision for this because everybody has been online, college students, it seems, this year. I'm generalizing. A lot of students have been online. I would expect that it would still qualify in these circumstances. So age, under age 19 at the end of the year, or under age 24 at the end of the year, but a full-time student enrolled full-time in school any part of 5 calendar months during 2020. All right. And I often have parents ask, is my child still my dependent? Well, this was one of the tests. They might have been a student for 5 months. So it's the relationship, the age. What are some of the other criteria? Residency, same principal residence for more than half of the tax year. Temporary absences are ignored. And those temporary absences include when someone is at college. So my, 22-year-old college student so far still could be checking the boxes for being my dependent. Relationship, age, residency. Support. The child cannot provide more than half of their own support. A full-time student does not consider taxable or non-taxable scholarship payments received in calculating the support test. So here you go. Here is where there may be some wiggle room in the year your adult child graduates. Maybe they qualify for the relationship, they qualify for the age, they would qualify for the residency, but now we have to look at support. So if you still continue to support them more than where they did not provide more than half of their own support, they could still be your dependent because they qualified under the relationship, age, and residency and support because they didn't provide more than half of their own support. So they still could be your dependent in that case. But if your child landed that really, really awesome job and they're going to make, $45,000 in their first job and they get this job in May and they decide to move into their own apartment, buy a car, pay for their car insurance, and you start adding up those living expenses, if they pay more than half of their own support in that year, then they would claim themselves because then you don't meet one of those tests for determining if you have a qualifying child. And in that case, it really makes sense. If they are providing more than half their support and they have that kind of income, they'd file their own tax return. They would get their, standard deduction and all of that and file their own tax return. Joint return is one of the other tests that you have to make sure that you meet, and it means a joint return. They can't have a joint return with somebody else. There's some exceptions to a few of these little tests that I'm mentioning, but I'm not going to get into all of the details because, this is just to raise awareness that you might have to ask some of these questions if you think you potentially could claim someone as a child, a niece, a nephew, or some other type of relationship. All right. So residency, support, joint return. They can't file another joint return. And then there's something called the tiebreaker rules, which I'm not going to get into tonight because they're complicated. And that is if you have both the father and the mother of the child, or even maybe a grandparent or someone who is really providing more than half the support. And maybe you share some of the maybe you share support. Maybe there's some, they lived with you each, half and half. So there's certain tiebreaker rules, which can be complicated, and I'm not going to get into that. So once we understand the tests that qualify our child or dependent for this status, there is going to open up the door for a lot of other benefits. And that's what we're going to talk about as we go through the show. But if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about children and education funding and credits and tax implications and all those kinds of things around children. So we just talked about determining if you have a qualifying child. It doesn't necessarily mean it is your physical, you know, child. It could be a descendant, meaning like a grandchild, and it could be a sibling, adopted child, or a foster child. So qualifying child had to meet six tests: relationship, age, residency, meaning same principal residence for more than half of the tax year. I don't know if I actually went into that. Residency had to be the same principal residence for more than half of the tax year. Temporary absences are ignored. I did mention that. And then the support, and not filing a joint return, and assuming you meet the tiebreaker rules. So that's your qualifying child. With that, there's something called the Child Dependent Care Credit for children under 13 for working parents, and there's a little asterisk with that, which I'll go into in a little bit. There's a child tax credit, so those are a little bit different. Child Dependent Care Credit, so if you're paying for child care, that's a dependent care credit. And then a child tax credit is just for that child existing. And then earned income credit, which I'm also not going to cover tonight, that's typically for lower income families, and it's based on your income and filing status and members of your household. So even single people, low income single people, may qualify for some earned income credit. But if you have low income and also have children, then you are could be eligible for an even larger credit. So that's earned income credit. Also, with the qualifying child status, you may qualify for head of household filing status if you're single or separated. A head of household filing status, that has some benefits to it. And then, of course, certain education credits and benefits. Now, you might have a child who's your dependent but doesn't meet the rules above, such as under age 24. Maybe they're over age 24, so they can't be a qualifying child, but they could be considered a qualifying relative. And that could provide some other types of benefits to you. So other relatives may qualify, but again, I'm kind of speaking to children tonight in particular. But for a qualifying relative, they still must be a member of your household the entire year, and you need to provide more than half the support. But there's also a gross income test as well. So that's a little bit different than our little story up above for qualifying child. For a qualifying relative, that there is a gross income test, and the gross income test applies at less than $4,300 for 2020. So if there's someone in your household, it could be your 25-year-old, you know, child, if they make less than $4,300, then they could qualify as your qualifying relative. All right. So, which could give you like a certain credit, tax credit, like $500 versus the child tax credit, which we'll go into in a little bit. Gross income includes taxable income and does not include tax-exempt income. So when you're trying to figure out the income for that child or dependent or qualifying relative in your house who isn't technically your child because they're too old or something, there is that gross income test. So let's run through some of these benefits that you may qualify for with these qualifying children. the child tax credit. So big one, really big one. This was updated with the, oh golly, was it the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, implemented in 2018. $2,000 child tax credit for children, and in 2020 it's $2,000, and there is a proposal for 2021 to increase this to $3,000 or even up to $3,600 for children under six. But there's certain income limitations, and for that proposal, which again I think it might have made it through the House but not the Senate, it's got to pass. And normally I don't really talk about proposed legislation because I think it muddies the water because it can change so many different ways. But it's the reason to kind of like pay attention to this, to know for your own personal planning. There is a much lower income level for the increased child credit. So what we're dealing with right now for 2020 tax filings is the $2,000 per child credit. And that credit phases out based on income above $400,000 for married filing joint and $200,000 for single or head of household. These are huge increases compared to what it used to be for the child tax credit. Really, really high income now that people can have in order to get that $2,000 child tax credit. It's pretty big in my opinion. So the qualifying child for the child tax credit, a child qualifies you for that if the child meets all of the following conditions. So we went over the test to see if they're technically your dependent for the qualifying child. The child is your son, daughter, stepchild, eligible foster child, brother, sister, stepbrother, stepsister, half-brother, half-sister, or descendant of any of them. For example, your grandchild, niece, or nephew. So remember, it might not be your child, and you might not have that on your radar then. You might not think it matters, but it very well could. For the child tax credit of $2,000 under these income limitations, the child has to be under age 17 at the end of 2020. The child did not provide over half of his or her own support. Well, for 2020, we already know that to be your qualifying child anyway, we already learned that they couldn't provide more than half of their own support. The child lived with you for more than half of 2020. The child's claimed as your dependent on your return. The child does not file a joint return for the year. The child was a U.S. citizen, U.S. national, or U.S. resident alien. For more information, you can look at Publication 519 for that. So we've seen the qualifications for the $2,000 credit and the phase out for it. So income over $400,000 married filing joint, $200,000 single or head of household. Why it's important to know these kinds of numbers, when we talk about planning, if I looked at a tax return and I saw that someone's, you know, adjusted gross income was $402,000, or there's a phase out, so it could be a little bit more. Let's say it's $415,000 and there's a phase out on that credit. If I looked at your W-2 and I saw that you weren't putting any money in a 401k, but you had one available to you, I might say, hey, if you increase your contribution to your 401k, you could bring your income below the $400,000. That is using your tax return to do some of your financial planning. And in doing so, you might open the door for the full child tax credit in that situation. You bring your income below $400,000 in ways that you can. Granted that you have enough cash flow to be able to do that, but it's about being smart about what you're doing. Sometimes I've seen where people are putting money into a Roth IRA. That's on an after-tax basis, and their income then looks higher. If we switch it to a pre-tax basis, especially when they're in that high of a tax bracket and that high of income, if we do it on a pre-tax basis, it reduces the income and then might make this you more eligible for the full credit. All right? Folks, if you have questions about taxes or whatever, you can give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Well, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me. And if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. I also want to mention next week's topic is listeners' questions, listeners' tax questions. So that is the whole show is going to be dedicated to that next week, listeners' tax questions. I also just want to throw out there and mention Lehigh Valley SCORE has programs. It looks like they are back in the swing with doing programs, and that's at lehighvalley.score.org. We like to help, mention them because they're so helpful to so many small businesses in our area, either starting a business, winding down a business, transitioning a business. They have mentors there. And some of the programs they have, for example, human resources, finding employees for your small business. That's March 9th next week. You can go on their website to get more information. Credit worthiness. They're going to explain the concept of credit reporting and the impact of credit reports on the operation or growth of a small business. Credit basics with Rebecca Sugar. And knowing what you need to build an online presence. So that's March 9th, March 16th, March 30th, April 6th. Lots of information, again, on their website, lehighvalley.score.org. And I thank Lori Catanzaro for printing those out for me each week. I don't always have the time to mention it, so thanks, Lori. We had a question off air from Mary in Nazareth, and she said she made nonprofit contributions by telephone, received a thank you from the nonprofit, but did not list the amount. What to use for proof of donations? Well, Mary, if you made your donation via a check or a credit card payment, I just, either take a photocopy of my bank statement that shows the check, or maybe you get electronic copies of your checks, or the credit card statement. I'll just make a photocopy it and highlight it. Or just take what they did give you. You said you did get something. They just didn't list the amount. And take that and write the date and the check number or the credit card, date or payment that you made, and have it in your records, because you don't have to provide the support to the IRS. It's only if you're audited that you have to produce the receipts, etc. So, and your canceled check would be a receipt, basically. If it's less than $250, the nonprofit actually doesn't have to give you a receipt. A lot of them do, because I know for my husband and I, we get tons of them, and they will send us a receipt and asking for the next donation. So they'll say, thank you for your $50. Would you like to give more? But if it's under $250, they actually don't have to give you a written receipt. So just document it. That's what we do. We write, the check number, the date, so we know where to find it. If we were ever audited, we can go grab it really quickly. So Mary, I hope that helps. And to add to that, if people are not itemizing this year in 2020 because the standard deduction is so high, under the CARES Act, they are allowing up to a $300 monetary donation as a deduction. But you do indeed need to make sure that you have a receipt, or as we just discussed, how you would document that, Mary, again, in case you were ever audited. So you can't just say, oh, everyone gets the $300. No, you actually had to have given you know, a monetary donation. It doesn't count for Salvation Army or Goodwill if you've donated, you know, property, in-kind property. It is a monetary donation to a 501c3, and it's up to $300. It's not a huge deduction, you know. It really isn't, but it's something. It could buy you lunch or a nice dinner, depending on what tax bracket you're in. So $300, there's a special line for it on the tax return, and make sure you get that. My brother just asked me to glance at his tax return because he does it himself. He loves doing it by hand. He's done it that way for years, doesn't want to give it up. And there's benefits to doing it electronically. Number one, the IRS loves electronic delivery of tax returns. It quite often finds a lot of math errors right away to protect you. And you can do, you know, direct deposit. You can do direct deposit with paper filing too, but it just, you know, avoids a lot of hiccups when you're doing it electronic. But he loves doing paper, so he did paper. He asked me to glance at it. He missed the $300, and he had done a lot of charitable contributions. He had missed the $300, so he got that. And he had also missed that the stimulus payment that he had received had been adjusted. They had assumed it would be limited because of his income on his 2019 tax return. His 2020 income was a little bit lower, so he actually was entitled to more of the stimulus payment, and he had missed that. So there's also a special line on page 2 of the tax return for it's called the recovery rebate credit. And the only way you know what that amount is by doing the worksheet calculation. So the worksheet will go and say, you know, here's what the credit was. What did you get? Is your income over the thresholds? Here's the limitation. After you apply the limitation, how much of the credit did you get? Are you entitled to more? And then you come up with that calculation and put it on page 2 of your tax return under kind of the credit for taxes paid, and then it'll either wash out as a refund or wash out against the taxes you already owe and reduce that amount. So lots of little things on the 2020 tax return this year. So Mary, thank you for that question, and I hope that helped you. So we are talking a little bit about children and you know, what kinds of credits we get having children, but as I've said, it doesn't have to be a child. It could be a brother, sister, stepbrother, stepsister, half-brother, half-sister, or descendant of any of them. For example, your grandchild, niece, or nephew. And we do see where people take in their, you know, their other relatives in certain situations. So you may qualify. One of those folks may qualify as a qualifying child and qualify you for a child tax credit. I just want to say that child tax credit, I mentioned those phase outs, about $400,000 married filing joint, $200,000 for single or head of household, $2,000 per child, and they have to be under age 17 at the end of 2020 to qualify for that. Again, most software will catch that. As long as you're inputting the proper information, there is a proposal to increase that, but the income would be much lower. I'm thinking what it would be the $2,000 for those thresholds I just mentioned, but if you're even lower income, they would increase that credit to $3,000 for children 6 or older and $3,600 for children under 6. But the income thresholds on that are much lower, $75,000 for single, $112,500 for head of household, and $150,000 for married filing joint. And again, that is just a proposal. I think it went through the House, not the Senate, so we don't know what's going to happen with that, but I just thought I would mention it. Folks, we are at the halfway point. If you have questions like Mary did, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me. And if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and she'll bring it in to me and I'll do my best to answer them. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good, Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shandy Gray, and it's now 6:30 and 45 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight, low 31. Thursday is going to be sunny, high 41, and Thursday night is going to be 19 degrees. Friday is going to be sunny, high 34, and Friday night, low around 22. Saturday is going to be partly sunny, high 34, and Saturday night, low 21. Now, coming up, more of your financial choices with Lori Siegbert.
Thank you, Shandy. And I keep telling everybody spring is coming, but when I hear you mention those numbers, it will come. It will come. I feel it. I'm a psychic. I know spring is coming. Folks, we are talking about children and education funding tonight. Having a dependent and meeting certain tests and requirements could qualify the taxpayer for really, really high tax credits, child tax credits. If the child is not under age 17, or if they're over, 24 and don't meet the, qualifying child, qualifying relative, you can have a qualifying person for what's called the other dependent credit. And that is $500. So that's a person qualifies you for the other dependent credit. If the person meets all of the following conditions, the person's claimed as a dependent on your return. And we kind of went through some of those dependency requirements, but you can also see publication 501 for more information on that. The person cannot be used by you to claim the child tax credit. And the person was a U.S. citizen, U.S. national, or U.S. a resident alien. And that is a $500 credit. So, my college age child qualifies for the $500 credit, the other dependent credit. For either of these credits, you must have tax, and these credits will reduce the tax due. Okay, so sometimes we talk about tax credits. It's a credit against income tax. If you don't have any income tax, typically there's not a refund. You can use the credit up to the amount of tax you have. If your tax exceeds the credit, great, you got a full offset. If the tax is less than the tax credit, you're not going to get extra money, typically. So if you get less than the full credit, though, because you don't have the tax, there is something called an additional child tax credit that you may qualify for to replace that child tax credit, but not the other dependent credit. So you can do it for the child tax credit, basically, and you use Form 8812 for that, 8812. And it's up to $1,400 of the child credit that would be refundable for lower income individuals that have earned income. And I believe the earned income has to be at least $2,500. So there could be some eligibility there for a refundable credit. They just call it the additional child tax credit. And again, subject to income limitations and a limit on the amount of the credit. So now we've qualified this child or these children, etc. There's another credit that we could be eligible for, and it's called the dependent care credit. Who is a qualifying person? Your child and dependent care expenses must be for the care of one or more qualifying persons. And we went through that. But a qualifying person is also your dependent and who was under the age of 13, when the care was provided. Your spouse who wasn't physically or mentally able to care for himself or herself and lived with you for more than half the year. I wonder how many people realize that. Do we think about that? So a dependent care credit, if you're having to pay for someone to come in and care for a spouse who wasn't physically or mentally able to care for himself or herself and lived with you for more than half the year, or a person who wasn't physically or mentally able to care for himself or herself, lived with you for more than half the year, and either was your dependent or would have been your dependent, except that he or she received gross income of $4,300 or more, he or she filed a joint return, or you and your spouse, if filing jointly, could be claimed as a dependent on someone else's return. That's a mouthful. Bottom line, you just need to have awareness around this, that it may qualify for more than what you think. You must have earned income to claim the credit, and your spouse, if filing jointly, must have had earned income during the year. Earned income includes wages, salaries, tips, other taxable employee compensation, and net earnings from self-employment. A net loss from self-employment reduces earned income. Earned income also includes strike benefits and any disability pay you report as wages. Now, this was an interesting piece that I think some people might miss. There's a rule for a student spouse or a spouse not able to care for themselves. Your spouse is treated as having earned income for any month that he or she is a full-time student or physically or mentally not able to care for himself or herself. If you are filing a joint return, this rule also applies to you. You can be treated as having earned income for any month you're a full-time student or not able to care for yourself. So I'm going to try to put that in a little bit of a nutshell so that I have time to talk about education credits. I know someone who was working and the spouse was disabled and he had to put his daughter in child care, and thinking he might not qualify for a dependent care credit because his spouse wasn't working. And he thought the rule was they had to both be working. You had to have earned income. When in fact, the spouse wouldn't be able to care for their daughter because she was disabled and, you know, had a transplant, was going to doctors all the time, all kinds of crazy things. They qualified for the dependent care benefit. The dependent care credit. Okay, so you want to keep these things in mind. What would probably not be as obvious is if you had one of the spouses as a full-time student. So we often see, not often, I would say, maybe not often enough, we see, you know, a married couple later in life, one never, you know, finished college and they want to go back and finish college. They become a full-time student and they're doing it while, you know, the kids are little. They have to go to daycare while the, you know, spouse is going to class or studying or whatever it might be. That full-time student, if one of the spouses is a full-time student, it will be deemed that they had some earned income. And there's calculations, I believe, for this and how to figure out the credit. But just awareness. I love having the awareness. I hope that, you know, if anybody's listening and they might have that situation or know a family member who has that situation, it is certainly something to think about or check out. So dependent care benefits. Now, sometimes people will have a flexible spending account through work where they can do it for medical. We quite often think about it for health care, flexible spending account. But there's also a dependent care flexible spending account where you put away some money on a pre-tax basis, basically. Gives you a little nice incentive to put away money through a flexible spending account at work. And you have to use it for dependent care benefits. It shows up on your W-2. There's a box, I think it's box 10 off the top of my head, for dependent care benefits. And you have to let the IRS know that you use that money for dependent care. And you have to report that on Form 2441. On Form 2441. So let's pretend you put aside $5,000 and your child care was $6,000. You could actually get an extra bit of a benefit beyond what you had through the flexible spending account at work. Sometimes you don't get the full benefit because sometimes daycare costs, you know, $12,000. So you're not going to get a credit for the full amount of child care, but you still might benefit beyond just what you have on the W-2. That's tremendous savings right there. But you do have to prove that you indeed did have that qualified child care. If you don't, and you're doing your return electronically and you're not thinking about it, and you just enter the W-2 information and maybe you ignore the prompts that the software is kind of taking you through step by step, if you don't enter the child care expenses on Form 2441, the software will automatically take that money, and in my example, I'm going to call it $5,000. It will automatically include it in wages and tax you then. So you don't want that if you indeed did have the qualified child care. All right. One other thing I want to mention, someone threw this out to me just this afternoon, and it said Washington lawmakers are one step closer to authorizing a new $1,400 stimulus check for millions of Americans. And here's the little note of interest. This time, one big group could become eligible for the first time, and that is dependents age 17 and older. So those kids who are off at college, they're still your dependent, they're, you know, freshmen, sophomores, whatever. They didn't get the stimulus payment maybe in the past. Now, it looks like lawmakers are one step closer to authorizing a new $1,400 stimulus check for millions of Americans, and that is going to include dependents age 17 and older. That's provided the House of Representatives proposal is approved by the Senate. The legislation is expected to be finalized in mid-March. So I think that there seems to be more traction with that happening, and that's why I thought I might mention it. All right. One other thing about head of household filing status. So we talked about qualifying dependents, qualifying children, head of household status. I had said that that could give you some favored tax benefits. So you may be able to use or to file as head of household if you meet the following requirements. You're unmarried or considered unmarried on the last day of the year. You paid more than half the cost of keeping up a home for the year. And a qualifying person lived with you in the home for more than half the year, except for temporary absences. If the qualifying person is your dependent parent, he or she doesn't have to live with you. There's special rules for parents. That, too, could be something that many people may not have thought about. Their parent might be in a nursing facility. You may be providing more than half of their care and their cost and support. You may be able to take your parent, if you're single, if you're unmarried or deemed to be unmarried, you may be able to take your parent as a dependent, but then you could get that head of household filing status, which gives you a bigger standard deduction and a different tax rate. So keep that in mind. All right, so now I want to talk a little bit about education and the education credits. So there's lots of education credits. And basically what happens with education credits is the person who claims the student for as a dependent is the one who would get the credit. So if the child is claiming themselves and they're off your books, even though you might be paying for their college, maybe it's grad school or something like that, then that tax credit, the eligible education credits, whether it's American Opportunity Tax Credit or the Lifetime Learning Credit, that follows whoever's getting to claim that person. All right. So before I talk about the various education credits, let me first mention a great way to save for education is through a college savings 529 plan. The 529 is named after the Internal Revenue Code section 529. That's how they came up with that. It's a 529 plan. The incentive is for people to save for their children's education. And if you do that, there's going to be some tax benefits to you. You put money away, then wait to use it for qualified education expenses, which has a number of different definitions. Use it for qualified education expenses, and you don't have to pay tax on the earnings or the growth. And so it's just, you know, a great incentive to save for education, again, if you use it for qualified education expenses. As residents of Pennsylvania, we also have another incentive. It gives us a deduction on our tax return up to $15,000 per person, and it doesn't have to be our child. So I could put $15,000 in a 529 account for my niece or nephew or neighbor, whoever it might be. And as long as I have their name and their social security number, I can take a deduction on my tax return to the extent I have income. If I only have $12,000 of income, I could only take a $12,000 deduction if that's what I put in. If I put in $3,000, then I could only take a $3,000 deduction. If I make a contribution of $30,000 and I'm single, I'm making this up, I'm capped at $15,000. So we could get a deduction on our tax return for contributions to a 529 plan as long as I have the name and Social Security number of the beneficiary of the plan. I could get a deduction in Pennsylvania. And many states do offer a deduction, but they have other criteria. Like New York, you have to use a New York plan. Indiana, I think you have to use an Indiana plan. But Pennsylvania, they don't care what plan it is. You could use a Utah plan and still get the deduction. And a lot of people don't know that. And that could be the reason they're not doing it. So hopefully you will take this information and run with it. Folks, if you have questions, we still have some time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY Executive Director Greg Caponia. As we enter 2021, we are aware of the challenges facing small businesses working to retain their customer base while reaching out to new customers. If you run a small business, let us help you get the word out. For the next 4 months, we will be offering affordable underwriting messages geared to small business. For information, please send an email to greg@wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. I tell you, last week we had call after call after call, and tonight it's been pretty quiet, just one question. But hopefully you're all saving up your tax questions for next week, because next week's topic is listeners' tax questions. So we hope that we can help you get through your information and get your tax return filed. There has been no word on extending tax season, so we're still all gunning for April 15th. I'm a little worried myself, because a lot of the tax information came in a little slow this year. I'm not quite sure how we're going to get it all done, but we will try. So tonight we're talking about children and qualifying a child or dependent, and some of the benefits of having that, with included child tax credits, dependent care credits, and now we're looking at some education credits. And just so you know, education credits can apply to adults as well. So if you are working on a graduate degree, maybe my daughter is working on a graduate degree and she's 27 and she qualifies for something called the lifetime learning credit. So it's not just children who qualify for some of these credits. You yourself, if you're working on a four-year degree and you've never taken an American Opportunity tax credit before, you know, look at your income, understand the limitations, understand how this works, and you may be able to get a tax credit. So I'll try to do this a little quickly with the time I have left. So the American Opportunity credit, what I wanted to mention is it's the student, and who gets the credit is the person who claims that student as the dependent. So if you are claiming yourself because you're an adult, you would be entitled to it. If grandma claims the child as a dependent, then grandma could get the American Opportunity credit if they, you know, otherwise qualify with all the restrictions. So let's pretend you're mom and dad. And the American Opportunity credit for 2020, the credit is up to $2,500 per student. So sometimes if you have two kids in college at the same time, if you do this right and your income is within the limitations, you may be eligible for, you know, a $5,000 credit. So it's a credit up to $2,500 per student. It's 100% of the first $2,000 of expenses and 25% of the next $2,000. So basically, if you have written a check for $4,000 and your income is below the thresholds, you could qualify for a $2,500 credit. So $4,000 out of pocket. That means, remember, I was just talking about the 529, the education account. If you're taking money out of the 529 account, you already got a benefit from having the money in the 529. They're not going to give you another benefit. You can't double dip. So generally, what I will tell people is if tuition, let's say tuition and room and board are $20,000, you take the room and board and some of the extra expenses out of the 529, because 529s can cover room and board. The American Opportunity Credit is for tuition, basically. So if the tuition in my story, $20,000, let's say the tuition was $10,000, I'll put $4,000 out of pocket, get a $2,500 credit. That's kind of giving me $2,500 of free money. And then take the balance out of the 529 so that I'm not double dipping. I have $4,000 out of pocket that qualifies for the American Opportunity Credit. The rest of the expenses, as long as they're qualified expenses under the 529 rules, I could take it out of the 529. It's only for the first 4 years of undergraduate work. It applies to the taxpayer, spouse, or dependent. The qualified education expenses for the American Opportunity Credit are tuition and fees, books, supplies, and equipment. So remember, I said we're going to pay for the tuition out of pocket for the American Opportunity Credit up to $4,000, and that's going to give me a $2,500 credit as long as my income is within the limits. And any of the other money, I might use the 529, because the qualified education expense definition for the 529 plan, it's called a qualified tuition program, are much broader. It's tuition and fees, books, supplies and equipment, computer and internet service, room and board, if at least a half-time attendance, expenses for participation in a registered apprenticeship program, and principal and interest payments on qualified education loans up to a lifetime cap of $10,000. By the way, that's new, if you didn't know it. $10,000 out of the 529. We've never been able to take money out of a 529 to pay for a student loan, but now they're allowing it up to $10,000. And I believe you can also do it for siblings. So the deduction, if you do that, though, the deduction for student loan interest is not available for Section 529 distributions used to pay such interest. So, again, no double dipping. So you want to be smart about how you take advantage of some of these programs. Now, the phase out on the American Opportunity Credit, married filing joint, the phase out is between $160,000 and $180,000 married filing joint. If you're over $180,000, you're not going to qualify for it. If you're under $160,000, you'll qualify for it in full. If you're between $160,000 and $180,000, there's a bit of a phase out. Single, head of household, qualifying widower, and married filing separate, it's much lower. It's 80 to 90 is the phase out. So anything under 80, you'd qualify. Anything over 90, you would not. And then there's the phase out. All right. American Opportunity Credit, $2,500 on $4,000 spent free money. Lifetime Learning Credit. This is the one that I mentioned my daughter is getting. She's works full time and she is working on her master's. She gets the Lifetime Learning Credit. And the credit is up to $2,000 per return, 20% of up to $10,000 of expenses. So if she had $10,000 of expenses, she'd be entitled to a $2,000 tax credit. Her taxes would have to be at least that much. All right. So if her taxes were only $1,600, she would be able to use $1,600. All right. We had a call from Joan in Bath. Any part of cost of nursing home or personal care home tax deductible? Joan, this is a great question. If you itemize deductions, maybe this is for your parent, maybe you are supporting your parent. If there is nursing home that you are paying out of pocket or personal care home, it has to be nursing care is usually pretty obvious, and they're usually quite high, those expenses. If you itemize, then you may be able to get a deduction for it, but you have to itemize. And medical expenses are limited, so it's still 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. They've bandied back and forth between 10% and brought it back down to 7.5%. I think for 2020, it's still 7.5%. So if someone makes $100,000 times 7.5%, it's $7,500 would not be allowed. But if your nursing home care expenses are, you know, $100,000, then chances are you would itemize, because as long as it's medical expenses and it's over the limitation and then more than your standard deduction, you would be able to itemize. Here is also another opportunity, Joan. If the expenses are really, really high, I've seen this happen sometimes in the last year or two of someone's life. If mom or dad or whoever it might be in a nursing home and they might have IRAs still or retirement accounts or annuities, if you might want to look for the opportunity to put income on their tax return because you don't want to lose this huge deduction. So I've done this with people where we convert IRA money to a Roth and end up not paying any taxes. You got to be careful about the planning. So I'm talking in generalities here. Each person has to do their own planning. But we've been able to sometimes convert IRA money at a zero cost because we, you know, plan how much income we want to put on the return that will bring us to a zero tax. We can convert it, and then it's Roth tax-free money to their heirs and at no income tax. So that's that could be something you might want to think about because nursing home costs are very, very high. So again, it's if you itemize, if it's over the limitation, and then obviously over the standard deduction amount. Now, if you have a long-term care policy that helps cover some of these expenses, then you have to reduce it by that amount. But quite often there's like an elimination period, and maybe it's 90 days, maybe it's 120 days. And if you have a family member who's paying out of pocket for those 90 or, you know, 120 days, along with medicines and medical equipment and health insurance premiums and dental work and eyeglasses and hearing aids, all of that still might add up to something of consequence. And if the person is single, it's not as high of a hurdle to jump over for that standard deduction as we have with married filing joint people. So, Joan, I hope that helped. So that could be something you'd want to explore to see what amount it is. All right, so some of these other education credits, we've talked about 529s, deduction for Pennsylvania, American Opportunity Tax Credit. You can't double dip on these education. The Lifetime Learning Credit, absolutely a great credit that a lot of people might forget about or not think about because quite often it's, you know, graduate work. It could be undergraduate work too. If, for example, someone takes 7 years to go to college, the American Opportunity Credit is only available for 4 years. You can only do it for 4 years per child. So the lifetime learning credit, if someone's going a fifth year and a sixth year and a seventh year, you know, more power to you getting your degree. It's awesome. If you have additional expenses beyond the 4 years, then you may be eligible for the lifetime learning credit. And again, that's a credit up to $2,000 per return, 20% up to $10,000 of expenses. The qualified education expenses for the lifetime learning credit are tuition and fees, books, supplies, and equipment. And of course, a lot of the graduate programs cost a boatload of money. There's also a lower threshold for that. Married filing joint, $118,000 to $138,000 is the phase out. Under 118, you get the credit. Over 138, you would be completely phased out. Single head of household, qualifying widow, and married filing separate, lower threshold, $59,000 to $69,000. There are some other education benefits, student loan interest deduction. I don't see that a whole lot. That is also a phase out. The tuition and fees deduction. What else? We have savings bond interest exclusion. I haven't seen anybody use that like maybe once in all my years of doing this. Certain IRA withdrawals where they just avoid the 10% penalty, not the income tax, not something I usually would suggest to do because there are so many other opportunities and ways to pay for education. So I hope this helped a little bit tonight. You know, not everybody has children. I recognize that, but not everybody's retiring either. So we try to mix up the topics we have here each week. If there's a topic that you're interested in hearing more about, please shoot us an email at yourfinancialchoices.com. I love ideas. I've been doing this a very long time, and I run out of ideas. So if you have ideas of topics you'd like us to cover, I would be happy to entertain them. And again, you can send those questions or ideas through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Next week's topic is going to be listeners' tax questions. As I say each week, you can always ask questions off topic as well, but I do tend to dedicate more of the shows to tax season during this time of year because it's so much more fun and I love the questions we get. So that'll be next week. If you don't think you can listen next week, you just send it through yourfinancialchoices.com and I'll take care of it and you can listen to the recorded show later. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Lori C. Thank you, listeners. Have a great week.